It's Wednesday, January 27th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 179 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And this is Chris.
I feel like we're missing something.
I don't.
I'm not missing anything.
Okay, you know what? You're right. I'm not either. On with the show.
It sounds so much cleaner, and I don't know. I feel like I'm not getting interrupted.
Something is kind of odd, though. I mean, Pat's talking.
I know.
Oh, give him time. He'll shut up.
Pat, maybe it's time for you to rethink your views on the world. Maybe it's actually not Chris that keeps you down.
Well, you know, that could be true. There's just something about that magnetism across the way from me.
All right. Got one or two announcements here. We're going to hack real quick. This episode, we've decided to do a small topic roundup because we have a bunch of little topics that are role-playing related we wanted to hack through, but I don't see any of them really carrying a 30, 40, 45 minute conversation like hey, our...
It's not how big your topic is, it's how you use it.
Well, we're going to use these very well.
I like that, yeah. That's what I tell all the people.
I don't know, some people like a lot of topics, you know what I'm talking about. I think you do.
You lost me on that one, Chris. I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right, sorry.
Chris in his old age forgets a lot of things. So let's remind both the audience and him that episode 180, and that comes after this episode 179, Chris, we are going to do the health episode. So if you have any health questions, comments, whatever, be sure to get those to Chris via chris@feartheboot.com. Send them a PM on the forums, whatever is easiest for you. But be sure to get those to Chris, and we are going to try and cover those next episode.
So are you telling me that I have to wait till next episode to ask Chris why it burns when I pee?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just checking.
It reminds me of a Frank Zappa song, but yeah, go ahead.
And by then, it'll probably be bleeding when you pee, but that's okay. I do want to send a thanks to Totten. At least I'm presuming that's how I pronounce this forum handle. I have his real name, but I try not to use people's real names without their permission. But I want to thank him. He sent us some pizza tonight to save us having to go out to dinner.
And none for Chad.
Chad wouldn't have liked it anyway. I want to call him Hotten Totten. I don't know why. I just do.
You know what I came up with the first time I saw his name? And I'm brutalizing probably both the diction and the pronunciation here. But the quote from Dracula in German, Totenreiten schnell, for the dead travel quickly.
Mm.
And that was the first thing I thought of when I saw his name. I sent him that quote back. I think this is what he's using as a sig line now. But I actually looked it up. So even though I'm brutalizing it on the air, I apologize to anyone who's Germanic. But when I sent it to him, I actually looked it up and got the quote correct. So I just don't have it in front of me.
Hey, you just said it on the air. It's correct now.
That's right.
That's canon.
Gospel truth, baby.
German language is wrong. The government right now is correcting their grammar books. There's a charity going on right now I want to draw your guys' attention to. But you need to move quick, because it's my understanding that the window for this charity ends at the end of the month. So you literally have a matter of a couple days to hop on this, but it is a great charity. Unless you're a complete idiot, you don't play Rifts. And you probably have heard about a little problem that occurred in Haiti. Well, there's an organization called Doctors Without Borders, which goes to places that are in trouble and provides medical aid to those in need. Right now, DriveThruRPG is running a special where for $20, and it's my understanding that 100% of that donation will go to Doctors Without Borders for their medical relief effort in Haiti. For a $20 donation, you will get about $1,500 in RPG products.
Yeah, and these aren't just the bottom of the barrel. I looked through and I was excited about the Serenity role-playing game.
Yeah, there's a couple real winners in there.
Quags is in there, and I think it's one of the most interesting games I've seen in a long time.
Well, and you know, there's two really simple ways looking at this. If you want to look at it from a completely selfish perspective, you're spending $20 for $1,500. Even if a lot of it, in your opinion, is crap, there's got to be something in there you're going to like. If you want to look at this from a completely altruistic standpoint, even if you hate every product in there, you're making a $20 donation to a medical relief effort in a devastated country. This is hardly something to sit up at night regretting. So I will put links to this in the show notes, and I will link both where to make the donation and what you will get for the donation. Be sure to act quickly, because once again, it's my understanding, unless they've extended the deadline, this ends January 31st. So if you're interested in this, get out there and take advantage of this right now. And I don't want to quote a dollar amount because I'm going to get it wrong, but I heard earlier today how much they've raised, and they have raised a lot of money, which says a lot about the heart and soul of the role-playing community. So let's let the heart and soul of the Booter community be added to this chorus. Check the show notes for that information.
Yeah, last time I had checked, they were over 100,000. When you're going in $20 chunks, that adds up.
I follow them on Twitter, as well as a number of other people who have been constantly promoting this effort. And it's been interesting over the past week or so to watch the numbers climb and climb and climb. And as of today, when I last looked, it was close to $140,000. I mean, it's just a tremendous amount of money in a short amount of time. I am amazed and impressed at the way in which people are reaching out within the gamer community. It's pretty impressive.
I think that the gamer community is not something that you can underestimate. I think we've seen this now for years, really, with like what Penny Arcade has done.
Yeah, Child's
Play. So, you know, I think it just speaks to the fact that there's a lot of caring people out there, and it's almost like an untapped resource. So, yeah, I mean, we're human. We love everybody, except for Chad. That's another topic.
So I got four things here for the rest of the show. Four topics. I have a rant, a discussion topic that may include some advice, and two news articles.
I personally am all about rants. I think we should start with a rant.
Oh, okay.
I would work chronologically backwards.
Chronologically backwards, Chris? The show hasn't been recorded yet. How can I go chronologically backwards?
I'm saying your news article, if it's what we were talking about earlier, it's a bit more timely because it just kind of happened. And who knows, your rant is something that you usually boil about for a while. So
Chris is just hoping for some kind of a Benjamin Button miracle for himself to become young again. That's all it is.
All right, Chris.
When I was born, I was wrinkly.
While your hips become flexible again, I tell you what, I will let you pick. What is it you want to talk about?
Hell, I don't know. I wasn't even paying attention when we were talking. Do the prisoner story, because that to me is timely.
All right, this is a story.
That would be a rant.
No, this is not a rant.
It will be.
Yeah, there's going to be. All right, I will link this article also off the show notes, so you guys can go read the full article. I'm not going to read the full article just because I don't want to bore you with it. But here's the gist of it. This is something that was reported in the Associated Press, and the copy that I have was reprinted in the Oakland Tribune. Written by a guy by the name of Scott Bauer. The story is about a guy who's in prison. He's doing a life sentence for first-degree murder, and from what I understand, he has quite a rap sheet even preceding that murder, okay? So I'm not here to defend this guy or anything like that, and I do not want to get sidetracked into a political or pseudo-political debate about prisoners' rights. Okay, it's not the point of the article.
Well, see you guys. I'm out of here.
I didn't say we wouldn't talk about prison sex.
Oh, okay.
So stick around. All right, but here's basically what happened. This guy, whose name is Kevin Singer, filed a lawsuit in federal court against a Wisconsin prison, and the gist of his lawsuit was that they would not allow him to play D&D. In fact, just to read a little bit from the article, it says, Singer, 33, has been a devoted player of the fantasy role-playing game since he was a child, according to the court ruling. After the ban went into effect, prison officials confiscated dozens of Dungeons & Dragons books and magazines in his cell, as well as a 96-page manuscript he had written detailing a potential scenario for the game that players could act out. Now let me pause right there. 96
Damn.
Pages of adventure?
Wow.
He's got nothing but time on his hands. I guess
he is not a Chad GM. Yeah.
No, clearly. And he sounds like he's an extreme Dan GM almost in that sense.
I have no desire to give this man airtime, given what he's done, but I would almost be fascinated to hear what his GMing style is. 96 pages? I mean, you were talking about the typical spiral-bound notebook you would get for, like, taking notes in class, filling it from page one to four pages shy of the end campaign notes.
Okay, so here it is. In a nutshell, here's what it is. Your characters are trapped in the middle of a dungeon, and you have to break out.
All right. So now here's the part of the story, though, that bugs me. So to this point, I'm not going to get involved in this. You know, I may have my opinions, but I'm not going to get involved because the prison guards have to make decisions based on the situations they see. There's a debate about where does the line begin and end between punishment and just, you know, whatever. And I'm not going to get into that. And I hope you guys, if you want to in your living room, that's fine. But that's not where we're going on the forums or on this podcast. Skipping down a couple paragraphs, here's the part that bothers me. Singer was told by prison officials that he could not keep the materials because Dungeons and Dragons, begin quote, promotes fantasy role playing. This is the first item. There's no afterthought. Promotes fantasy role-playing. So this alone is evil. Competitive hostility. Well, if you have a crappy GM, maybe. Violence in a prison setting. I don't know. Maybe you'll shank somebody for killing your character. So maybe. Addictive escape behaviors. Possible gambling. Okay, on the possible gambling, I don't know. Maybe.
All depends on what edition he's using.
And according to the ruling, the prison later developed a more comprehensive policy against all types of fantasy games. Now, once again, forget the prisoner rights issue here. It's the reasoning, the gambling, the violence, whatever. Okay, maybe it does. From talking to some people, I've come to understand that role-playing games as they're played in prison, because there's nothing else to do, can get pretty absurdly intense. So I follow that. And I follow that they've had to ban them for a variety of reasons, because people, once again, with nothing but time on their hands, get too worked up about certain things. But what bothered me was it promotes addictive escape behaviors and promotes fantasy role playing.
You see, I don't get the...
It's like a throwback to the pulling report. It's like it's 1980 all over again.
I mean, some of that in that it's like in the end, they're talking about, you know, a new rule to ban all fantasy. Would they care about other genres? Are they singling fantasy out because they don't know anything else exists?
Yeah,
or is this just actually aimed at fantasy?
Since chess was based on court politics and war, I mean, do they need to get rid of chess? I mean, as you read the article, I saw a link to the article. I follow it to a point, but the whole thing smacks of this same type of prejudice that was around in the 80s has apparently not gone anywhere. It apparently does not get as much press as it used to, but this idea that anyone who role plays, that's going to turn them into Blackleaf, this is apparently not gone anywhere.
See, I wonder if there's actually more to the story, and they took the stuff out of spite and then needed to come up with a reason to justify themselves.
Well, you know, but yeah, with the statement, so that sounds like it came from some sort of official report as to the court's reasonings as to why they did that. And honestly, I could see easily the whole competitive role-playing. Or the, what was the competitive what?
It was excessive competitive.
Competitive hostility.
Competitive hostility. Yes. I can see that. I can see that being a thing for exactly the reasons that
but
you said.
But they allow basketball. Basketball is going to have more hostility out on the court than a role-playing game.
I mean, look what these people do on the national.
They have weight rooms where they can build up the muscle to actually be violent with each other.
They have shop class where they can make shivs in prison. I mean, come on. I'll tell you what, though. I'm going to agree with them on the violence, and here's my reasoning, because we have sat around these mics in many episodes and talked about the fact that so many of these game systems are just built around combat to kill things. So right there, they're really not that far off the mark. I mean, it is a violent game. You've got all these stats and all this equipment for killing creatures, and that's what you do. We've said it. We've sat around the mics and said it. Chad's gone on and on and on about it. So,
Since we're missing Chad here, that actually has some merit. Since we're missing Chad here,
it's a little weird.
Let's funnel our inner Chad. Well, I guess it's because it was D&D. I mean, I guess that is cruel and unusual punishment.
That's true.
Maybe if you were playing Dread, there wouldn't have been a problem.
If they
here.
Make them play 4th edition, they're going to come out to be even more violent killers. That's just wrong.
There is competitive violence in the game.
You're right,
well,
there is.
And as I was prepping for this, you know, I tried to get some other perspectives. And I even talked to some people that have been employees of the correction system and such, you know, to get their perspective on this. And they did make some valid points about how this type of game in certain contexts can lead to negative behavior. And so once again, I don't take issue per se with what they did or some of the reasons, but it's those couple lines in there that one of its negative things is promotes fantasy role playing. Period. That's a self-contained thought. That's not a comma. That's not a context. That is a bullet point of why it has to be gotten rid of. As if fantasy role-playing is itself dangerous and evil.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I mean, that
promotes drug use, you know, or whatever. Yeah. It's that type of statement. I don't know.
Hey, look, you know, all I'm saying is, did they teach Sylvester Stallone how to role-play in Demolition Man? No. They taught him how to knit. Okay? That is true correction.
That's true. He did not
come
out.
He came out a better man. What did they teach Wesley Snipes? They taught him how to kill things. And what did he come out to do? He was like a psychopath killer. And that Sylvester Stallone had to knit something to take him out with.
And if you'll remember how that documentary ends, Sylvester Stallone is working a better society while Wesley Snipes is just sitting there playing D&D.
Exactly.
That's exactly what happened.
He's still trying to figure out how to use the shells, but hey, that's just say a few curse words and get some paper and go to town.
Yeah. Well, those shells were
with all this talk about gaming in prison. I wonder if we have any fans that are in prison. I just envision someone sitting in a cell with Pat's picture up on their wall and a heart drawn around it and be like, 6 months till parole.
You know,
St. Louis,
you're gonna get some prison people coming over in FurlyCon 3, Pat. Hey, where's Pat?
Let me tell you straight up, I know for a fact we do have fans that have records. I'll tell you that right now. Because at previous Wing Nights or Fear the Cons, I've gotten into some discussion. 45s
or 33s?
Well, I have.
God damn, you're old. I know. Jesus Christ. You were right on past the A-track. I mean, some people might get the A-track reference, but 45s and 33s are like, what the hell? Numbers? What?
It's little wax cylinders, Chris.
Right now, Keith Curtis and the other old Watson, guys in the forum are all sitting there clapping their hands in celebration.
Right. Watson, come here. I need you.
But
God damn.
I know we have some listeners that have records. I would not doubt we have people listening to the show who right now are behind bars for the simple reason there's not a whole lot else to do. And once again, as I was doing a little bit of legwork to prep this, apparently because of the fact that this fits the demographic, you have a lot of people with a lot of time and not much else to do but socialize. Role-playing games or this type of interaction is a very, very popular thing to do. And I'm not comparing the two, so don't everyone get your panties out of a bunch. But it's the same reason that role-playing games are so popular in the military or in college, is because of the fact that you have a large group of people pretty much stuck together without a whole lot else to do. My point being that I have no doubt there are people listening right now from a cell. I have no doubt that that's going on.
And if they need a pen pal, chad@feartheboot.com.
Chris is going to have to depart us because he has to go pick up his kids. So that's leaving the...
Oh, kids, thank God you worried me.
So
after the week I've had, Dad, you don't give a guy a scare like that.
And now there are three. So the three of us will continue.
See you next week.
Bye.
Let's move on to something a little bit more lighthearted. This is another news article, but this one comes from The Onion. This one I'm going to read just because it is so apropos to the role-playing community. The title of the article is Man Who Enjoys Thing Informed He Is Wrong. George Himmelsbau, 32, was informed Tuesday that he was incorrect in enjoying a thing he has been deriving pleasure from for many years. Authorities in the field informed Himmelsbau that although he believes his appreciation of the thing to be a matter of subjective personal taste, any positive feelings or satisfaction taken from this are by definition erroneous. Furthermore, sources reported, Himmelsbau does not in fact enjoy the thing, but has merely been convinced that he does by the influence of others who also claim to enjoy the thing, but who must be insane or developmentally disabled if they actually do. Himmelsbau has responded to the information by endeavoring to enjoy the correct things in the future.
I think you just described half of our audience right there.
I you know what? I described half our audience. I described us. I described the entirety of the gaming community right there. And you know what? I tell you, if
it's not just the gaming community, though, this actually hits on one of my big pet peeves. There's a lot of the mentality out there that a lot of people have of this is only good because it's not mainstream, or this is only good because it's mainstream. And the people that'll just jump on the bandwagon. Chad told a story a while back about the he played a song for this group and they were yelling at how bad it's, you know, how much they hated it. And then a year later, they're wearing the T-shirts.
Yeah, it was a Nine Inch Nails thing back before Nine Inch Nails was a household name. But I've seen this from both angles in game mastering and other things where for some reason, liking something makes you an idiot or not liking something makes you an idiot. Or I guess you get kind of the tangential thing where if you like something and I tell you I don't like it, that's not my commentary on the entertainment or artistic value of something as I perceive it. That's an attack on you. And we have gotten angry emails in the course of running this show where we make a joke about something or express insufficient familiarity with somebody's pet RPG or whatever, and they just flip out as if it was an attack on their character. And I don't mean their PC character, I mean their human character. You know, their character in the Martin Luther King sense of the word, that we went after them as a human being by saying we don't like this game or aren't familiar with this game.
Look at how much feedback we get every time D&D is mentioned.
I had this debate with...
You mean every time Chad mentions D&D?
That's a good way to put it.
But yeah. I had this debate with Mikey Mason when he was here down here visiting us, because I told him that's my opinion. I think Shakespeare's a hack, but that's an unacceptable opinion. But I said, if Mikey enjoys him or anybody else enjoys him, that's great. Lots of people appreciate it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, there's a difference between saying I don't like something and that guy's a hack. There's a big difference there.
Well,
it's
then
a
we got
level.
Into a big debate about whether Chaucer or Shakespeare was actually the better author, but I won't continue that because Mikey's not here to defend himself. So let's get to something that's a little bit more traditionally Fear the Boot advice oriented, you know, a little bit more substantive.
Right, so if Chad's not here, I guess it's not going to be avoiding combat in all ways in games.
Probably not. Yeah, well, somebody will carry the torch for him.
Is Chad like a ghost that haunts this podcast? That he's not here. The blue mic sits empty.
Has anybody noticed how much I've been talking
about him? Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
hey, it's a longstanding tradition.
If I wasn't married, I might be jealous.
It's a longstanding tradition at any circle that the guy that's not there
takes the ribbing.
Exactly.
All right. So, all right. Well, Chris is off getting hip replacement done. All right. So here's the topic: overcoming perfectionism. There's a real trap that a lot of people fall into, and I think this is most seen with game masters, but players do this as well. In fact, I think really anyone that sets out to do anything in life, particularly within the creative arts, but truth be told, anywhere, is you hit this point where you are so worried about getting it right, you are so worried about failing or embarrassing yourself that you never get anywhere. And this came from an email we got from a guy who was saying, as a game master, that he finds himself trapped in this cycle of doing tons and tons and tons of prep work and never actually running the game because he never feels it's ready to go.
Yeah, that sounds familiar, I think, to all of us here. It's one of the things I've never understood about myself and about other people sometimes is, why don't creative people create? They spend so much time doing the prep work to create that when it comes time to actually do the thing, it never comes out.
Yeah, I think maybe it's one of two things. One, which really isn't the situation, at least in this gentleman's email, is sometimes you just get distracted by the other shiny. You're trying to write a book, I don't know, whatever. You get 20 pages in, and then another project catches your interest. Truth be told, that's one of the biggest problems Fear the Boots had. That's why we don't complete a lot of things we set out to do, is because a new shiny distracts us. The reason that is relevant here is something that I've heard colloquially called production anxiety, that the very act of doing something or the result that may come from doing something scares you to the point you can't do it. I see this all the time in artists and also writers. So it seems like artists are more plagued by this than writers for whatever reason, where they can draw until you ask them to. A writer can write until it's time to do it. And then all of a sudden they can't do it anymore. They lock up.
I have that problem a lot. And like, I will sit there staring at the screen, keyboard ready, and I just won't do anything at all. I'll have the whole story going through my mind, or the whole whatever I'm trying to write will be there. I'll even take paper and I'll outline what I'm going to do and never fill in the outline. That's a big problem that I have.
You also see us on the player side. And I think the biggest place is analysis paralysis. The players are trying to formulate a plan. They're playing under a GM, let's just say theoretically, who's not real likely to kill the party over something stupid, yet they will spend 3 hours trying to perfect the perfect plan for something that's going to take 30 seconds to roll out.
That happens a lot, I think, and it's happened to us. But here's what I wonder, though, because in your example, you're saying that they're playing under a GM that's not likely to do that. My question would be is, if you're playing in a situation in a group that's like that and you know that, why the hell would you get that way? Like, if I knew that and I knew that it could be a little bit more lax, I'm not just going to sweat every little decision. I'm going to be a little bit more free to do that.
That's now, a good question, Pat. Side, why do we get that
well,
way?
That's a good, I don't know. Well, I think because I'm not thinking that way. And I know I shouldn't be, because I know that I am playing in a situation where GM is not likely just going, you know, to do a total party
kill
on us.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I know Dan's not going to wipe us out, but I'm thinking it. I'm thinking, how do we possibly get out of this? Or if we do get out of this, are we going to lose all our stuff?
Well, now, I have played in situations that it was much more that way, because it was, and they were upfront about it, saying, you know, hey, I'm going to play this balls out or whatever, and it can go either way. So, and when you're faced with that kind of a situation, that's when I can really see it locking down. It's like, oh my God, okay, we've got to come up with a perfect plan. We've got to scrutinize it, because if we don't, we're going to be screwed. But that is a good question. And I think it is. You're right. It's a perfectionist, because we're all perfectionists around
here.
Well,
I suppose, though, even if you're not facing down character death or the total party kill, you are still faced with the concern that you want the best result possible.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in our current game, I'm not going to total party kill you guys. But when the bad guy is trying to get you to unlock the MacGuffin for him, there are many outcomes to this situation. Even if I'm not going to kill you, you could end up severely maimed.
Yeah.
The bad guy could get the MacGuffin. The MacGuffin could be destroyed. You could get the MacGuffin. Your ship could get blown up in the process. Even if your characters aren't dead, you've lost your ship and you're all floating about in escape pods now, vulnerable to whatever cares to pick you up. And so even in those situations, I still see why there would be a desire to craft this perfect plan. Now, here's my question, though. We've stated the problem, and I think probably 99% of the people listening to this can relate to the problem on some level. How do you fix the problem?
I was thinking about that as you were saying it, and especially in the situation that you just brought up, the problem was almost non-existent because we had to resolve that almost in real time. And what I mean by that is we got into this situation and it was like, you know, the bad guys were there, guns at the ready to shoot us, saying, you're going to do this. If you do not comply, we will kill you. And we had a matter of minutes to come up with something to do. And that helped. That forced our hand and we did it. Now, when we get in trouble is we're presented with a problem and we've got time to think about it. You know, it's not like a cliffhanger. It's not that they're bearing down. You know, the ships are coming. We've got 2 minutes or whatever. We've got time to think and come up with a plan. So from a GM standpoint, I would say if you've got a party, if you've got a group of players that are really bad about this, you need to avoid giving them copious amounts of time to come up with the perfect plan.
Yeah, I'm going to say from a creative standpoint, the best advice is suck it up and do it. You know, you're going to want it to be perfect. Just create. It won't be perfect. It's never going to be perfect. It may never be good enough for you, but still just do it. Force yourself through it. You can always go back. That's the important thing, is just get started.
I had a fairly long conversation with John about a great many things, flying from Fort Lauderdale back to St. Louis about a year ago. And he gave me a quote which just stuck with me. And I actually went back and looked up who said it. It's a quote by Voltaire. And the quote, of course, was originally in French. And I'm not going to attempt French. As bad as I am at German, you don't want to hear my French. But the quote is, "The perfect is the enemy of the good." And I don't want to answer this problem with too many platitudes, because I think the issue of anxiety and perfectionism, I can find you tons of platitudes from motivational speakers, religious or pseudo-religious texts, blah, 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 whatever, philosophers, gurus, self-help books about why you just need to get out there and do it. Why doing something's better than doing nothing. And those are all true. They are all absolutely true. But I don't think they really offer much help. I think the only reason that phrase by Voltaire, "the perfect is the enemy of the good," helped me is because for some reason it just clicked with me. I'd heard 100,000 sayings along similar lines before from Thoreau to whoever else. But for some reason, this one phrase about, yeah, get out there and do it even if it's not perfect, just clicked with me. But there are three things I came up with thinking about this that I have seen either in games or in the course of my creative endeavors that have helped me get through this type of stuff. The first is, Wayne, kind of like what you were saying, because I'm not calling what you were saying a platitude. I hedged it by saying I don't want to go there, but I don't think what you were saying was, is to develop self-discipline. And that's not a platitude. That's a life skill, to be able to discipline yourself into doing an act. The same way, if you get a puppy, you have to discipline that puppy into being housebroken. If you have a child, I hope you are disciplining that child to be a good human being. And in the same way, we have to discipline ourselves to behave or not behave in certain ways. And how do you do that? I don't know. I mean, if anyone out there has multiple kids or multiple dogs, you've probably seen that the techniques that work on one don't work on the other or aren't necessary on the other. And the same thing's true here. I can't tell you how to do that. But what I can tell you is it starts with an awareness of, okay, introspect. Why am I not doing this? What is the real issue? I'm anxious. Why am I anxious? Because my players are going to be disappointed in the game. Well, so what if they are? It's a game. I'll do it better next time. What are they going to be more disappointed in? A bad game or no game? If you look at the player perspective, games are not about life going well. It's about a group of people dealing with problems. Our plan's not perfect. Okay. I mean, if this is competitive player, you've got a bloodthirsty GM, maybe it's different. But in the types of games that we run, it's not a game about life going well anyway. It's better to get out there and do something than nothing. I mean, it's not the glass.
You're not going
to
get out of a situation by sitting there.
You know, you mentioned the fact of like conditioning. And I know being a father, going through raising a kid, one of the things that they tell you is that if a child does something for 3 days, it sort of sets a pattern. And after 3 days of time, it sort of sets a new habit. So I think you can maybe apply that to what you're doing here. You know, you need to try to do something. If you can try to do it 3 times, maybe that'll form a new habit. And what I mean by that is, like, instead of trying to do the perfect plan, let's just get a pretty good plan. Let's only take 10 minutes to make a plan and go with whatever we got and try that for 3 times. And maybe that will start something or whatever it is that you're struggling with.
Absolutely. I like the idea of a GM seeing this to put a time crunch on it. Be like, okay, guys, you've got 5 minutes and then the bomb goes off.
Yeah, and I think...
And you've done that, Dustin. And that, yeah, I've enjoyed that because that actually gets us moving.
I think that's critical. I think that you don't have to be vicious about it, but you got to take control of your game.
Yeah.
Like we always say, you know, keep it rolling.
A habit I developed, and this came from a lot of RPGs that had the 10-second round. Now most of them have 5 or 6 second rounds, but with older versions like D&D and a lot of the FASTA games, they all had 10-second rounds. So what I would do is if they were taking too long to do something, I would just hold up both hands, all 10 fingers, and 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1, I'd keep dropping fingers, and they got the hint. I didn't have to say anything, but they just saw me counting off the fingers, and if I got to the last finger and they had declared no action, their character sat there in indecision while the NPCs acted this round.
And I was going to ask you, from a psychological standpoint, how many times did you actually get to no fingers when
never.
You did that?
I do not remember a single time ever getting to zero fingers.
I would have bet money that that would have been your answer yep. because there's just something about that psychologically that you think, oh, crap, and you go, you act. And what would you have done had you gotten to zero?
I would have done exactly what I said. Yeah. I don't think I would have brutalized the party because it's not my GMing style, but the NPCs would have had a round of knocking off some hit points or grabbing the MacGuffin or whatever they're going to do while the players stand there in indecision.
You know why the indecision bothers me? Because it's too much trying to come up with this perfect plan like we're discussing. Your characters wouldn't necessarily come up with the perfect plan. If you're actually playing your characters in character, your characters have 5 or 10 seconds to come up with something. They don't have the half hour you just spent debating it.
Well, and oftentimes...
Pick something and roll.
Well, yeah. And oftentimes they're also not in a position to discuss it with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Pat, getting back to your persistence thing, talking about the 3 times and it's a habit, this is something that, for example, I believe Stephen King recommends in On Writing when he's talking to writers, but I think it applies to GMs as well. What you do is you start to treat it like a job, not to the point of burning yourself out or making yourself bitter towards it. But what you do is you say that, okay, 1 night a week or 2 nights a week or whatever, you set a schedule, you block out the time on your calendar from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write 1 page of game notes. I'm going to create 2 NPCs. I don't know. It depends on your note style. We talked about this last episode, but whatever your note style is, you are going to do 1 unit of preparation. And here's the way you're going to do it. You're not going to make it right. You can edit anything later on. Your goal is simply within that time frame to have something. What you then do next is you set a deadline for yourself. You say, and tell your players this, that on this day, we are going to start this campaign. If you stuck to your schedule, you have some amount of notes. The night before the game, you can sit down, look at the notes, edit it the best you can, but you already know you've got to run this the next day, and so you will come in and you will run a game that may not be perfect, but it will be good. And in the glass half empty versus half full, I'll tell you right now, half full is better than completely empty.
You know something I do, Dan, and I don't know if I've heard anyone else say they do this, but I'm sure other people do too. I like to sit down and do the shotgun approach where I sit there, all these ideas that come to me, basically brainstorming, I'll write bits and pieces here. I may write a paragraph about this, a paragraph about that, a chapter about this. You know, I may create this character, whatever. And then I may not use any of that, but generally what happens when I sit there and I spend a night just doing that is those pieces I use then for an actual complete work later. So like I'll come through and I'll write something and I'll read it later. And it's like, man, this really is bad. But then it's, you know, it gets me thinking, and then I'm able to go through and actually do something. And it's all about just doing something. I mean, that's the big part. Just shotgun ideas out there.
There's something else I found that helped. And I figured this out looking at Fear the Boot, because I asked myself something. Fear the Boot has been going over 3.5 years. This May, we will hit our 4-year mark. Most creative efforts I've done, I mean, they may have been around a long time. Most of the creative projects I have, like Epoch Crisis, Skies of Glass, whatever, are ideas I've had in my head since the early to mid-90s. But they come and they go. Yeah, I work on them for a few weeks or a few months in earnest, and they disappear and fade to the background. And so I sat down and asked myself something. Why is it that Fear the Boot is still here almost 4 years in, and I've never gotten this far with anything else? And I came up with two answers. One was a certain amount of social pressure, because I have hosts that are going to show up, et cetera, et cetera. But you have that with a role-playing game as well. So it's like, okay, that can't be really the helpful advice. But here's the helpful advice I did come up with. It's the constant feedback loop. What I found was if I sat down to write a novel and nobody was looking over my shoulder, nobody was looking at it, nobody knew what was going on, it would fade into the background. Part of what keeps me disciplined and coming back every single week to record another episode of Fear the Boot is the fact that I know there are not just a couple other hosts showing up here, but when it comes to be release day, which has been all over the week since the history of the show, but it's currently Wednesdays, that come Wednesdays, there are people who are looking for that show to be there who will start to get restless if it's not there. And so I have this constant feedback loop where I am, number one, only being asked to deliver a bite-sized bit of content. It's an hour show, which with editing and production, you're talking maybe all total, takes me maybe 3, 4, 5 hours to get recorded and edited and posted. This is all something I can easily knock out in a single night or a night and an afternoon thereafter. And there is this constant demand to have me keep doing it. And this is why one of the things that I have decided I'm going to do is moving forward, I am not going to attempt to write a finished role-playing game. I am not going to attempt to write a finished novel. I'm going to write serial fiction because I can sit down and put out 4 or 5 installments of serial fiction, at which point there is now at least some small audience who's creating that feedback loop to want more, who's expecting more. If I start a role-playing game and start putting out some notes on here's how to run it, somebody's going to take it for their home game. And they're going to be emailing me saying, well, what about this? Or we tried this. Would you consider incorporating that into the rules? And now all of a sudden there's that constant feedback loop. I'm seeing the same thing with Con Planner right now. If I had just worked Con Planner to completion, it would have never been released. But I released a half-developed product, and what's happened is I'm getting these constant requests for new features, changes, whatever. And as people who are using it can attest, every couple days I push out a new set of features, and it is a growing, evolving product that one day will be a version 1.0.
You know, the downside to that is it wouldn't be a downside necessarily from a role-playing game or from the website standpoint, but for someone who's writing a piece of fiction, if you're the type of person that goes back and will edit your beginning based on what's happened later on, once it's out there, it's kind of out of your hands and it's a little too late. And that's one of the things that's always made me a little nervous about serialized fiction, because it's just like we talk about, you have all this information when you're running a game until you say it, it's not canon. Well, at that point when you're writing, the moment you release that piece of serial fiction, that's canon, and the rest of your story has to twist around it instead of the other way around.
I see what you're saying on that, because since I have worked with various people that have written things before, I think that a yes and no on that, because if you're writing something that you're trying to complete or whatever, and you release it to, say, a small group of your friends, and you read over it and ask them for inputs, advice, look at it as how does it look, I think that you can go in there, and then you can go back and fix things.
Oh, that easily you can, if you actually publish it somehow, it changes something. But it depends on writing style. Some people never go back and change what they've already done. Others do.
Let's say this back to role-playing games. How do you apply that to role-playing games?
with role-playing games, just like we always say, and once you say it, it's canon, then you're working around it. You just have to get used to it with a role-playing game because you've done it. And I guess it would probably be the same thing with a fiction. You just have to get used to it. It's a different mindset to how you write. So it'd be a different mindset to how you run.
Something that's helped me is if there's a game I'm having trouble starting, I've oftentimes found it's best to just say, screw it, do the first game. Even if it sucks, it at least gives you some idea of where to go next. I found that many times that I've got a terrible first game, but once I run it, now all of a sudden I'm getting inspiration for what the characters and the players are latching on to, where things are headed, and now I can go back and turn this into a better game. Something else I found that helps to create that feedback loop is not just the players, but also sometimes people outside the game. Sometimes Carla will be there putting some pressure on me, you know, asking me, have you written your notes for this coming week? What's going to happen next in that game? But you find somebody outside of the game who can keep making sure you're doing something.
So I've always had the mindset of, if I'm having a problem starting something, then I don't necessarily start at the beginning. I'll start part of the way in because it's what I'm inspired to do. But the problem with a role-playing game, if you're trying to write like maybe the second session or something, you have no idea what your players are going to do in the first session. So it would be harder to do that, but it still might be enough to, I make this. This is what I'd like for my second session. How do I get there? Okay, this is how I get there. And then you come up with the first part after it and then just end up throwing out the second part. There is nothing wrong with writing something that you end up throwing out, whether it be fiction, role-playing game, whatever, doesn't matter. There is nothing wrong with writing something that you end up throwing out if it gets you started.
I suppose to close this out, I said I didn't want to leave this on platitudes, but I guess this is kind of straying dangerously into that territory, is, you know what, there are a lot of people out there who have played in good games, and there's no one out there that's played in a perfect game. Don't set that as your goal. Just freaking do something. And I hope somewhere in here we may have given you a useful technique for getting over that perfectionism. If we haven't, then it's time to sit down and do some hard thinking about exactly what the mental processes are that block you from turning out that product.
Yeah, because it's different for every person.
Absolutely. And that's why it was hard for me coming up with advice, because I can't tell you what's stopping you. I can tell you you need to get out there and do it. And once you do it, you'll find it gets a lot easier. But what's stopping you?
From the talk that we've just had on this subject, I think the biggest thing that I took from it personally was the fact that it's really a community. It's not trying to tackle it alone. It's realizing that there are others, there are friends, family, whatever around that can be helpful. They want to help, they will help, and you can get advice, whatever, from them. And just, it's that tribe mentality. We are a tribe, and, you know, we work better in small communities than we do alone.
Yeah.
So here's my rant. This is how we're going to leave the show. So I'll go ahead and say in advance, everyone, don't forget Fear the Con 3 sign up is still going on at fearthecon.com or conplanner.com. Either one will get you there.
It's a lot of con in this episode.
Yeah.
We'll start off with cons. Now we're talking about con.
Bitch. I wonder if there's a role-playing game based in a prison.
But one of the things that somebody mentioned, and so I want to reiterate, because I think I said it on the show, but I want to be sure I did, is one person was saying to me that they were a little concerned by the fact that it seemed like some of the games they really wanted to be in were set up very early and filled up very early, and so they can't get in anymore. There are at least two slots left I still intend to run games in. I am intentionally waiting to create those games until early to mid-February. So watch the RSS feed. Keep on top of the games out there. I'm intentionally holding things back. I've talked to some other people that are either holding back stuff because they're waiting on travel arrangements or doing the same thing I am. So just because the good stuff's full now, don't freak out. Heck, if nothing else, run something yourself. But stay on top of Fear the Con. Be sure to get signed up for it if you haven't already. And I hope to see a lot of you guys there. So here we go. Here's the rant I'm going to close this out on. This is something I was bitching about in email to somebody. I would love to give this guy's name, but once again, I don't have permission to do so. And off the top of my head, I don't remember it. This guy writes me in, and we get to talking about a couple different things. And we're talking mostly about the ultimate role-playing game. And this led into a rant of something I don't get. I don't understand the human nature here, okay? We are all creatures of habit. I don't care how creative or clever you think you are. Every human being is fundamentally a creature of habit. We find our comfort zones, we fall into them. I can give you several proofs of this, but I won't bore you guys with an even worse Dan Aykroyd than the show's already been. But we are all creatures of habit. For example, you find a mechanic that you trust. You will keep going back to this guy with all your car problems as long as this guy is around. Yeah. You find a doctor you trust, a dentist you trust, whatever, doesn't matter. You find your go-to man for something, and you will keep going back to them to fill that role. You will trust their advice. You will trust their ideas.
I know. I keep going back to Pat. I'm never going to give you up.
You're never going to run around and hurt me? Thank you.
Except the game master. And here's what I mean. If your mechanic says to you, a guy you've known, he's a one-man shop. Your family's known him for years. You've gone him for years. He's never screwed you over. There's been a few things he's fixed for free. This guy knows his stuff inside and out. And he says, you know, we really need to do something. To you, it sounds a little risky or expensive. You're going to go with what he says, probably. Same thing with your doctor. But when a game master says, you know what, guys, for the next game, we ought to play something. And the anecdote that led up to this was my explanation of trying to get Ultima into a previous gaming group. In our current gaming group, it seems to be Star Trek. But in that gaming group, it was Ultima. And I said, I'm going to run an Ultima role-playing game. I had been GMing for some of the people in that group for over a decade. They liked my GMing style. They generally wanted me to GM most of the games. I had never led these people astray. I mean, I'd run some bad games, but generally speaking, I had never led these people astray. They enjoyed my GMing. They loved the stuff I did. But the minute I'd come to the table and say, guys, just trust me. I have a game that's going to sound a little quirky, but I have a killer plot in my head. I have a killer way to work you guys into it. Just trust me. This will be a blast. Let's play it. No, that's a stupid idea. It'll never work. You don't know what you're talking about. That's crap. You're an idiot. We don't do this to anybody in our life but our game masters.
Well, I think you answered your own question, though. I mean, you talked early on about how you find the things you like. You go to them. You go. You trust.
You're going to go with this, games, not the game master?
Yes. You get stuck in the rut, or you get stuck in the,
you know,
these are the kind of games I'm comfortable with, and you're coming with something from out of left field. It's not that they don't trust the game master. It's that they don't want something new. It's scary. People are afraid of change. Mm-hmm. They are creatures of habit.
I can see that. But at the same time, when you're talking about role players, we play a lot of different games. I don't think I know a person that's really a role player that's only, say, played one genre, or they've only played D&D, or they've only played whatever. So I don't know if it's that as much. And furthermore, I think that you just had a screwy group, because personally, myself, with the game masters that I've had, when they've come to me and said, hey, you know what? We've been playing D&D for a while. I'd like to try playing Deadlands or Shadowrun, or I'd like to play Call of Cthulhu. I'm like, okay, that sounds fun. And personally, I know that in our current group, I am definitely one that says, I would like to try these other things. I've never done it before. That sounds awesome. Let's do it.
And so, I think sometimes you focus on the negative part of the feedback. Like the Star Trek game, for example, you throw out three different options for games. And some of us latch onto one and we're like, we want to do this. This sounds good. But you're stuck back on that. Well, wouldn't you rather do this? Well, no, you have us hooked. We want to do Epoch of Rhysos.
Now, that may be true.
We'll put it this way.
But that's only part of the story.
That was true of me. And you know that to be the case.
Yeah, that's only part of the story. And I'm not picking on my current gaming group, because sometimes that is the case. Sometimes I'll agree it may be product comfort.
Yeah.
We're comfort with...
Don't present the option if you don't want to do it.
Well, as I say, and then secondly, sometimes it's product comfort. It's not you don't trust the game master, it's you don't trust the game. But sometimes it's a matter of they've latched onto another option. But I know that does not tell the story all the time. Because, you know, it's the same thing. If you go to your mechanic, you go to a doctor, we'll go with the doctor again, and he's always prescribed you this one medication, particular condition, and you come in the next day, and he says, this new medication's come out, it's better, it has less side effects, my other patients are seeing great results, would you like to try it?
I go to the internet and research.
Maybe, but the point is, you're probably going to say yes in the end. Unless you come up with some really compelling reason. You find out on the internet that the FDA has just pulled it because it causes head explosions or something.
Well, or
you try it and it doesn't work. But the point is, you're going to go with it. Say you go to your mechanic and he says, I know we've always used, I don't know, I'm just making stuff, AC Delco parts. But I found this particular part is more reliable than the AC Delco parts we've already used. Let's use that instead. You're probably going to listen to them. And so I don't buy that product attachment or game attachment tells the whole story.
Well, here's the other aspect, Dan, is we don't know anything about medicine or cars or anything.
Yeah. Have you gone to school for 12 years to be a professional GM? No, I don't think so.
God damn
it. I'm not going to trust you.
Yes.
I'll trust the doctor. He's, you know, he spent half his
life. I have a PhD in gameology. Holy shit.
Anything you say, I will do. So yes, I will play that game. Yes, it looks great.
Yeah, there's your problem. You never show us your PhD.
I mean, yeah, I guess
you bring
so.
That in.
Oh, I've seen his PhD.
Pretty huge.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right, but I really don't have anywhere to go with that. It's just a rant, and I would think it was a rant worth making because anecdotally, an emailer on the forums, I talked to a lot of other GMs that had the exact same frustration that their group loves what they do. But the moment they say to them, look, just trust me, that trust for some reason is never there. And Wayne, I know to your point, sometimes it's because they're more fixated on a different shiny. But there have been times I presented an idea in a vacuum or even presented it with other ideas. And that's not what's going on. Somebody's saying, I will not play this game because I don't see how it can work. And I'm sitting there telling them, just try it.
You know, I always have an instant reaction when someone says, just trust me, to distrust them. Usually they're saying, just trust me, because they don't have the data backing them or something. Trust me is usually a fallback when you don't have a good argument.
You know, I'd be interested to see the response to this topic, just to see what people think as players or GMs, what they've encountered. Because like I said, from my standpoint, I don't see that as much. Like, I've always been very willing to try new games.
Yeah, I want to try new things. I want to try old things that's old for everyone else, but new for me.
So, and again, I think you're right, though. I think it gets back to that whole thing of when you've got a group of people, it's the least common denominator that gets their way. Yeah.
And they don't want to go out of their comfort zone.
All right. So I hope you guys enjoyed this little small topic roundup of these disjointed non sequitur ideas. And of course, we will be back in 180 with a pretty laser focus on health topics. So we will catch you then. In the meantime, have great games, and we will catch you later.
We're out of here.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.